The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, forget the cold turkey, here's your fix of special post-Christmas roundup. A time of year when it's truly better to give than to receive. At Loftus Road, Rob Green, oh you shouldn't have, as Ars keeper hands Baggies a win. At Villa Park, Bale makes Lambert a Christmas sweater as he sends his Villa back down towards the drop. There's Stoke knocking the stuffing out of Liverpool and much, much more as we round up the Premier League midweek and look forward to the weekend's games. Elsewhere, there's a Forest fire for Sean O'Driscoll, posts and much, much more in Football Weekly Extra. I say much, much more, but I'm not sure if there is anything else, actually. This is quite a short show today. A short show containing the vocal talents of Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Hey!
Hey.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you.
Happy holidays, perhaps.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Yeah. And making his pod debut. Exciting times when we have a pod debut. They can be dramatic, they can be controversial, they can be wildly successful. I'm thinking Simon Hattonston. So many glorious precedents. Daniel Harris.
Hello. I will try and avoid the Jonathan Woodgate.
Exactly. Apologies if you downloaded waiting for Barry Glendinning, because there was a little bit of confusion about start times and that. Anyway, Daniel, so glad you could join us. And the good news is, you come prepared. You bring something to the party. You watched Man United Newcastle on one of those clever feeds.
I did, which is almost the best development for the benefit of football fans in the last generation, apart from the show, obviously.
Right. Lovely. What, you mean those feeds?
In that, yeah, football fans are priced out of everything everywhere, but they can watch their football team for free on the internet at their leisure.
Right. You know, legally they can't, of course.
I think legally they can watch it, but it's illegal for sites to allow them to watch it.
Oh, right. Well, that's brilliant then, isn't it?
Something like that. I mean, I think it's similar to buying alcohol. It's like drinking alcohol. You can drink alcohol before you're 18. You're not allowed to buy it. That's what it's like.
Oh, is that what it's like?
Yeah,
all right.
I think so. I am an ex-lawyer.
Are you, Daniel?
Yeah,
I am. What prompted the switch across to the wonderful world of football?
I didn't like being a lawyer. Being a lawyer didn't like me.
Right.
So I thought I would give myself some time to indulge in some hate with something different.
It's a bit like cool. Little Huts, weren't you?
Yes.
All right, then. Now, do tell us about what you saw at Man United Newcastle. They went behind as usual, Daniel.
Yeah, and it's funny because you have Alex Ferguson talking about how the club has such great character and such great comebacks. But if you keep going behind, eventually you actually have to look and see, well, maybe there's a problem here. Rather than praising their ability to come back, you have to castigate their ability to go behind.
Well, there was a problem, and it was that Mike Dean fellow giving away goals that really shouldn't have been given. Isn't that right?
I thought so. I'm biased because they're my team, but if the striker, Papis Cissé, I think it was, if he wasn't interfering with play in the position that he was in, then you have to wonder what he was doing on the pitch. Because Johnny Evans, who scored the own goal, had there not been a man behind him, he wouldn't have lunged at the ball in quite the inept way that he did.
But that's not the law. The law is that he has to actually make a movement for the ball. And whether Evans touched it or not is kind of irrelevant. He just went for it. So that it was a goal under the current laws of the game.
I thought I looked at them and I thought that I was convinced that it wasn't a goal. But the law is certainly an ass. But I think the situation is the point of the law is that it doesn't mind that much if it ends up penalising defenders sometimes.
Hmm.
And that's what happened here. So, yeah.
I mean, if he'd been in De Gea's sight line, then it would have been disallowed. But the shot was going away from Cissé anyway.
But
I must admit, I'm with Jacob on this one, but I'm not an ex-lawyer myself. One thing I did think was that Mike Dean had some cojones to basically call that one back after the linesman.
Oh, he loves that.
I think I can't quite remember, but I think he might have been the referee at the West Ham-Aston Villa game in the first day of the season where ball was pitting from a free kick. It flicked off an Aston Villa player and went through to Vaz Tay, who was in an offside position, and Vaz Tay put it across and Nolan scored, and the linesman flagged for offside. And Dean came back and said, no, it was the Aston Villa player who touched it, so therefore he wasn't offside and he gave the goal. So he's quite good at actually correcting mistakes that have been made.
I think he quite enjoys it. There's a picture of Mike Dean on the internet, which you can find if you search for Mike Dean and Michael Brown, where he's giving a penalty in the most ostentatious manner possible. And I think he quite enjoys pointing out to you the thing that you won't have noticed that only he has noticed.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, at the same time, as you say, you have to have some element of respect for a man's testicles for doing that.
He got quite the, uh, quite the verbal put down from Fergie as well at half time, didn't he?
What did Fergie actually say to him then?
Oh, it was just probably quite blue.
There was a lot of arm waving. It was a bit like the air traffic controller from Jimbo and the Jet Set, if you remember those.
Not a reference I'm familiar with.
I think Jacob's too young.
Right. A lot of our listeners will no doubt be enjoying that one, Daniel. Evra, he's scoring a lot. Is he not rubbish after all, then?
Right, but he was pretty poor on the third Newcastle goal. He was nowhere near Cissé. So it's okay if your defenders are scoring, but not so great if they're conceding 28 goals in 19 games.
It's interesting. United's defenders have scored 10 league goals this season. And Evra had scored, I think, one goal for United previously, perhaps two. And
season?
No, in his United career. And he's now scored four.
Mm.
And
three of them are headers.
And Johnny Evans, well, part of that is actually, although Robin Van Persie's startling composure in front of goal has been revelatory, it's actually his delivery from set pieces has been almost as significant for people who are used to watching Ryan Giggs shank them into the first man constantly.
The thing is, they give teams a chance, don't they, by playing Giggs and Scholes. If those two play, then you do fancy yourself, even though they do overall have better players than you. And we've seen it over and over again against Norwich. Giggs played and they were outplayed. Liverpool, they got away with it.
They got away with it because Giggs
and
played.
Spurs did them, yeah.
And it's very peculiar because and Ferguson's kind of come into some criticism from Manchester United fans for precisely this, where everyone thinks that they could pick a better team than him. It sounds absurd to say it, but Giggs and Scholes has together in any kind of combination hasn't worked for a long time. The thing is both have exceptional talent, so they can come on and they can change a game, but they're not really able to dominate a game anymore, and the bits in between the magic are becoming increasingly wayward.
Mm. Newcastle's bit between the magic in league terms now stretches for over 40 years. You have to feel rotten for poor old Alan Pardew after this one.
Who doesn't feel rotten for poor old Alan Pardew? Mm. Which, I mean, I thought at the time that the most aggravating thing about the goal that Mike Dean then allowed was the sudden change in Pardew's demeanour, in that he's not someone for whom I feel too much affection. But at the same time, you do have to argue that Pardew really knows something with the way that he has transformed Newcastle.
And then back again, yeah.
I mean, I don't feel so much blame attaches to him there, because he has a small squad and he's been really unlucky with injuries. And although perhaps it should be stronger and you could blame that on him, you can't just replace, when you're Newcastle, you can't just replace players of the quality of Kabay and Tiote when they're not
Ben
available.
Arthur as well. Mm. Mm. Jacob, you an Alan Pardew fan?
Sort of.
All right, good. Yeah. The bad news for Newcastle is not only do they not get a win at Old Trafford when they seem poised again and again to maybe do that, but Sunderland go above them in the table, while Man City fall to 7 points behind Man United. This courtesy of a 1-0 victory for the Black Cats against the Citizens at the Stadium of Light. The third straight season that they've lost there.
Each time 1-0. Yeah.
At least they avoided the last-minute goal on this occasion.
The last two times were last-minute. I wasn't too surprised by Sunderland doing that, though, but they do have a really good record over the last few years against City, and they had that game as well at the Etihad where they drew 3-3 last season. Yeah. And City just
haven't...
But
you weren't surprised by this?
No, because City away from home, when teams sit deep against them, they seem to just run out of ideas if they don't get that early goal. And I know that Dzeko's been coming on and getting those late goals here and there off the bench, but there's just a lack of rhythm and cohesion about the team this season. I think part of it stems from the summer transfer dealings, that they didn't buy properly in the summer. They didn't strengthen the areas that needed to be strengthened in the summer. They bought people like Scott Sinclair and Jack Rodwell, who haven't done anything. Mykon's not done anything. Javi Garcia, he's so-so. I don't think the fans have really taken to him. And there were, even though they won the league last season, there were obvious weaknesses. I think that they lacked width. They lacked a bit of pace. The first 11 is very, very good, but beyond that, I think there's not so much there.
Although, I don't know how much we can believe anything you say, Jacob, after your Man City don't sell out home games anymore.
Yeah.
Farrago the other day.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say about that, Jacob?
Just, I watched Match of the Day and there were a lot of empty seats.
All right. Well,
because the thing about...
Well, no, just to say, 1.618034 and no rhythm or blues are both among the many posting, and to say Man City have sold out every home game since September 2011. It might not fit the narrative, but it's still a fact.
So what we're establishing is that season ticket holders aren't turning up then.
All right then.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's not a full attendance.
I don't know.
I think every Jacob's ticket waiting sold. For the moment where someone says, you are right, Jacob.
Yeah.
No. Daniel, sorry, you wanted to make a point here.
I was going to... I mean, the thing about City is that people talk so much about what a great squad they have, but actually that was never the case. And I think it's to Roberto Mancini's shame that he's had that much money and he hasn't managed to put together a good squad. The reason United...
Why wouldn't you call this a good squad?
Because they don't have too many options. As Jacob said, they don't have much in wide areas. And last season, they had an exceptional spine. So they had Joe Hart, they had Vincent Kompany, they had Yaya Touré, and they had Sergio Aguero, who were the spine of the team, who had exceptional seasons. And they had David Silva, who for the first half of the season was supplying the additional magic from wide areas. But then when he lost form and when Kompany got suspended, then got injured, City started to drop points. And what you saw with United was their first 11 was no match for City. They lost 6-1 at Old Trafford. They could have lost 6-1. They were even more inferior in the second league game that they managed to escape with a 1-0. And even in the cup game that United won, the first 10 minutes United got absolutely pummeled by City, scored on the break, then Kompany got sent off. United scored two more goals before half time, and even then, against 10 men, they were still lucky to escape with the win. So
City won.
Yeah, United won, but they were lucky to escape with the win despite playing 10 men for more than 45 minutes.
So hang on, I'm confused. Weren't you saying that City aren't as good as United?
No, I'm saying City's first 11. First 11, they proved three times, even in a game that they lost, was far superior to United's. But the reason United were able to stay with them was because in games when they weren't playing well, that Ferguson had lots of wide options and he had three good strikers who he was able to bring on, whereas City didn't have that.
Right.
So this season, now Roberto Mancini didn't strengthen the first team and United did. They bought Kagawa, they bought Robin van Persie.
Yeah.
So City... Because Kompany and Hart have lost form, and because Silva's not quite as good as he was, Aguero's not quite as good as he was, they don't have the players who, apart from Zeko, who they can bring on to make things different when they're not winning. So they've managed to score the occasional late winner, but it's not enough.
Right, well, rest your case. Adam Johnson and Joe Hart.
Yeah, so that was a very, very strange goal that Adam Johnson scored. When you were just waiting when he was cutting in from the left, I thought, oh, he's maybe going to cross it here, or he's going to try and take on a man, and then suddenly he shot from a ludicrous angle. And I know that maybe Hart was expecting the sort of in-swinging cross or something, so his weight was on the other foot, but even then it was from so far out, and he got down to it, and it was just really, really poor goalkeeping.
Watch how many times Joe Hart gets beaten to his left. I think that is a particular weakness. He's a brilliant keeper, and until this season, I think his brilliance wasn't just how good he was at stopping things. It was that he was always doing it at the correct moments in the biggest games. But he's now his post-match interviews have suddenly become a lot less candid now that he's having to answer for himself more frequently. But he has, I think, a particular weakness of low shots to his left.
Right, that's worth bearing in mind. Opposition strikers. Listen, you were mentioning what changed things for Man City last time around. How much of an impact is the upcoming Cup of Nations going to have for them with Yaya Touré going out of the picture?
Well, last season it actually didn't manage to matter too much, and it's difficult with him because he's a player with incredible talent, but it seems to take him a while to get going, and I'm not sure he really has this season. And I think we're now coming to the point where they would be hoping those rumbling runs that he makes that seem inexorable would begin. So he's going to now go away, and then they're not going to have them, and they don't have a replacement. And
the big thing as well they were doing last season was they would bring on De Jong if they were struggling in that kind of game, and they lost him. It was stupid probably on both parts. I think it was a contract issue and they let him go to Milan, but Garcia is a downgrade. And but also teams have kind of cottoned on to the fact that if City are drawing 0-0 or losing 1-0, Yaya Touré will be pushed back, and as good as he is, there is a way to stop even the best players, and teams have kind of seemed to have worked that out a little bit.
Well, Man City this coming weekend are going to be at Norwich. Sunderland will be hosting Spurs. Man United, without Rooney, who's out for, 3 weeks?
Yeah, apparently so.
They're going to be hosting West Brom, while Newcastle will be at Arsenal. Arsenal, of course, fresh from their Boxing Day off. And that's a big game for a Newcastle team who still remain worryingly close to the bottom three. Well, 5 points. Close-ish, shall we say. Norwich hosting Man City, as I say, and Sunderland taking on Spurs. Sunderland are now 7 points clear of the drop, just as Man City are 7 points away from the title.
2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, everyone was saying, is Martin O'Neill finished? And that's just how quickly football changes. Everyone was saying, is he past his sell-by date as a manager? You know, hopping up and down on the touchline. Is that completely out of date and
now, hopping up and down.
Yeah, it's hopping up and down, it's jumping up and down, out of date. But three
was
three
the issue
in,
that he stopped hopping up and down, that he looked basically almost resigned.
Well, I saw him on Saturday against Southampton. He was doing a lot of hopping.
No, now
up and
he's
down.
Hopping back.
Yeah,
but
you might even call it moshing.
Yeah, he's moshing on his own. Yeah,
right. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, the
concern was that he'd stopped moshing and was just kind of moping.
He was upset. Yeah,
yeah.
But three wins in four games, and they played quite well.
Wins in four games.
Yeah, they played quite well at Old Trafford.
Mignolet.
Oh, that, a really good save from Touré.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Key man in this, no?
Sunderland have got some quite good players. Sessegnon's a good player. Adam Johnson has some talent. James McLean's a talent. And I think the main issue was actually that Sessegnon was out of form because they're quite solid anyway. They weren't conceding that many goals. But they needed Sessegnon, who's the one who makes them spark, because he gets the ball to Stephen Fletcher, who is
always intentionally, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Stephen Fletcher's not the kind of player who tends to make his own chances. You just need to get him the ball. Mm. But they were very reliant on Sessegnon to do that. And now that he started doing that, Sunderland have improved
also
a lot.
Adam Johnson for about 2 or 3 months wasn't really doing anything.
He was injured a lot as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he took time to settle. In the last two games, he had a big part in the goal at Southampton, and he scored yesterday.
One of the things with him at City was that he never seemed to play a full game, and he didn't quite look as... I mean, I'm judging this by footballer's standard rather than by our own standards. He didn't quite look as svelte as you would expect a professional athlete to do. And I think that's something that Martin O'Neill would have noticed, because it seemed impossible not to notice. And he does now look a bit fitter, and he's playing better.
Well, interestingly enough, Thursday's gossip sees Mignolet linked with a move down to Arsenal.
Been for a while, that's been
yeah.
I would be disappointed if that happened, because I think Chesney is an exceptional talent. And the only way for those goalkeepers to improve, and we're seeing it with De Gea, is for them to play. And so signing someone to go in front of Chesney, I think, would be very un-Arsene Wenger-like and not the best use of the money that he's got.
Mm, that money that he's got. Interesting. Well, we'll talk a little bit about Sunderland's next opponent, Spurs, but we'll do it after this. Spurs, Jacob, Spurs.
He said it with such dirt and filth in his mouth. Spurs, he spat out.
I enjoyed watching them yesterday.
Yeah, I bet
you
did.
They were fantastic.
They were good. They were at Aston Villa.
They were at Aston Villa, and that's
now conceded
12 goals
12
in two
unanswered
games.
Goals
yeah.
in two games.
I know. Joining such luminaries as West Ham, who once did that under Glenn Roeder about 10 years ago, yeah. 7-1 and 5-0 against Everton and Blackburn. But Spurs yesterday, it was kind of painful actually watching it, not because Spurs were playing well, but because Villa was so poor. They just, I kind of expected a bit of a reaction from them after the weekend. They were playing at home, and the crowd were actually quite supportive of them after losing 8-0 against Chelsea. They were and even when they were 4-0 down at the end, they were singing Paul Lambert's name, which was pretty good to see. But they didn't play at all. I think he kind of had to take a bit of blame for that, because they played a very defensive formation. They had one up front, and maybe the idea was to frustrate Spurs for a while and get the two wing-backs forward. But this is where sometimes the tactics don't really matter, because they played nominally two wing-backs, but they were just full-backs. They were not able to get forward at all. But to be fair, Villa didn't really do a lot wrong. They did as much as they could within the constraints they were placed under by Lambert. And Spurs just dominated the play, and Bale was in the second half was just outstanding. And I said on Twitter last night that hat-trick was like Messi. Doesn't mean that he's anywhere near as good as Messi, but just the way that he took them, all left foot, speed, skill, and the speed of the second and third finishes, where you thought he kind of lost it in the area, and then suddenly it was in, past Guzan before he had a chance. And then the first goal as well.
Yeah,
I expected Guzan to be out and out onto that, you know, because he was out of the picture on the camera. You expected him to be out there and clear it, but Bale's just so quick that there was nothing he could do. Amazing.
I mean, I think I agree with what Jacob said about the tactics, in that sometimes you just play a team who are better than you, and that was pretty much what happened to Villa. I think what they tried to do was they thought they'd sit quite deep, because Spurs have that pace on the break, so they tried to reduce the space between their back four and the goalkeeper. So for the first kind of 45 minutes, Spurs played in front of them, but then once people start to lose their discipline a little bit, Spurs are able to take advantage of that. And I think with Bale, what we've seen this season is that he's there now. For the last 2 to 3 seasons, there's been a lot of hype about Bale, based largely on one brilliant game against Inter Milan and some flashes here and there. But what we're seeing now is he's scoring a lot more goals, and they're regularly exceptional goals. Not the best goals you've ever seen, but the kind of clinical expert finishing that requires real genuine ability that you can't see very many players scoring. So although the goals he scored yesterday were not goals that will go down any lists of great goals, there are very few players that are able to dispatch them with such ridiculous, humiliating alacrity.
It was unexpected as well, the first goal, because he had Adebayor open to his left and he thought he'll just pass it through there, and that's what the great players do. They do what you don't expect them to do, and that touch to take I think it was Baker out of the game was superb.
The rubbish players often do what you don't expect them to do as well.
Yeah, Jovinho does a lot of that.
It's Villa now, 3 points from the drop.
I know, but last week everybody
they're
was
reeling.
Praising. Last week everybody, they beat Liverpool.
He's a new Martin O'Neill, isn't he now, Lambert?
Yeah, he has something about him, Lambert. And last week they've won 3-1 at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And everybody's singing his praises. Yeah. So,
but that was before the psychological hammer blow for this young team.
Yeah, but they've just played two very difficult, two top sides in Chelsea and Spurs. And they're also missing some of their more experienced players. They didn't have Vla, they didn't have Dunn at the moment.
But the psychological hammer blow, Jacob, for the young team.
True. I think that, this is the thing as well, where Alan Hansen gets unfairly criticised about saying you can't win anything with kids.
Right.
That Man United team had a lot of experience around it. In this Villa side, they're all young.
It wasn't the kids that won it. It was Schmeichel, Keane and Cantona.
So they're all young in that side.
Right.
But the thing about
psychological hammer blow. He needs to do something to get a bit more experience into the side, because otherwise it just might get too much. Like we saw with, for example,
ping out the dent in their psyche.
Well, Gareth Southgate had a big thing, didn't he, about Middlesbrough playing all those youngsters in when he was the manager there.
Yeah.
But when they got into a relegation scrap, they just didn't know how to handle it, even though there were a lot of talented players there.
I think Paul Lambert, I mean, aside from being possibly the Premier League manager with whom I would least like to have a physical altercation.
Do you think he's the hardest man in Premier League management? That's a great shout, Martin Jol.
Arsene Wenger did the classic hold me back, where he stood up to Martin Jol, and you're thinking, if you're anywhere else other than in this place where there's 50,000 people watching, I think you might not be doing quite this.
Martin Jol, I'm not sure about mobility there, how much that's going to be on his side. If he corners you might be in trouble. Though.
He's also not as Scottish as Paul Lambert.
Yeah, there's the Scottish factor. That's the key thing, isn't it, really?
Because the other person is Fergie, who's one of those very rare occurrences, and a man who's, well, twice my age, who could still give you an absolute pasting if it came to it.
Yeah, I can see that. So you got your Martin O'Neill. What do we think about him? Would he be all right? What we really should do is draw up a table and then pair off Premier League managers and against each other and find out who our champion is.
The Guardian could sponsor it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're saying basically that Paul Lambert's going to end up top of the table, yeah?
Just
Tony Pulis, I reckon, can. Or no?
Tony Pulis can use his baseball cap like Oddjob or something.
Naked.
Or Big Sam, although he's not that big.
Big Sam.
He's not that big if you meet him in person, no.
Again, mobility, I'm thinking that.
I think that was just an I've met Big Sam in person there.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just taking a moment here. Harry, no. Who's going to be the softest manager? It's Arsene, isn't he?
Hardy.
I think Arsene.
He's French after all.
I feel like he probably knows where the pressure points are. You know, that kid in the playground who like pokes you in the side of your neck and
Chris Hughton. He's the nicest man.
No, I reckon Chris, when called on to defend himself, will dig deep, much as his Norwich have
done. He's just really nice. He just wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, but if he was in a scrap, I'm saying Arsene Wenger might taunt you with words about chakras and stuff like that. But when push came to shove, he would fumble and drop his glasses and
Rogers.
And all sorts of stuff.
He reminds me a little bit
Brendan
of
Rodgers, I reckon, would get nasty. He'd pull your jumper over your head
but he wouldn't be hard,
blind
would
you with envelopes and stuff.
Scratches, eye pokes. Scratches and eye pokes, Brendan Rodgers. But I think Arsene Wenger reminds me a little bit of the Street Fighter character, Dalsim, who was also like very thin and long and rangy, but could do some quite nasty things to you involving yoga fires and yoga flames.
Two words, Daniel. Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, he would eat him for breakfast.
I don't know. I'd worry about Rafa in a scrap.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because of his tendency to colour up and go red. And I don't think.
No, but he just. I just
I don't think he'd have the icy calm.
He'd just walk off, annoyed.
No, he wouldn't. Brian McDermott.
Oh, you're right. He's the weakest.
I don't know. I think Rafa. That's the one. No, Arsene Wenger. It's got to be. But anyway, let's put an end to this. Well, there's a fascinating. Who else haven't we mentioned, actually? I mean, let's put in.
Well, we didn't mention David Moyes.
Moyes. Right, okay.
Yeah, and he
also
wins by Scottishness.
Yeah, that's
true. So it's Lambert v Moyes in the final.
Now that Mark Hughes is gone.
Oh, it's Moyes. We don't need to hold a final.
Yeah. There was that great occasion, it was probably, I think it was 2005, when Fergie had a row with Moyes on the touchline, and they're standing there like head to head screaming and shouting at each other, and then they interviewed Moyes after the game. If I could do the accent, I could, but I can't. And Moyes said, oh, it was nothing, we just exchanged a few words in Scottish.
Now, where do we get to? Oh yeah, Wesley Snyder. Talking about transfer talk.
I don't really get that one, because Spurs have this wage ceiling and Snyder's on a lot of money at Inter.
Yeah.
And VS Spurs is all about high energy, pressing, tempo. And Wesley Snyder, you might know more having watched more Italian football, but whenever I've seen him play, he's a lovely player, but not that kind of player. And
more suited to the Italian rhythm of the game.
Yeah, and they got rid of Van der Vaart in the summer.
Mm. I don't quite get Wesley Snyder. I mean, from what I've seen of him, he had one incredible season where he was almost the best player in the world. But beyond that, his career has been mainly flashes, from what I can see.
He's a very overrated World Cup as well.
Yeah, just, he scored lots of goals. I mean, that sounds almost ridiculous to say.
Goals
but
are
he didn't
overrated,
do that much else. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think he's been an outstanding player for Inter when... But it's true, he has had some lean spells, but...
I like him a lot, but I don't... I get, though, why Spurs want that kind of player.
A creative player in...
Because they do, as we saw against Stoke on the weekend, they do struggle when teams just sit back. And what Villa did, what they did wrong yesterday was pour forward. Yeah. They got a bit excited at the start of the second half.
I do take it back. I mean, his ability to open up a defence with a telling pass, etc., is pretty much unparalleled.
Yeah.
But, if you're talking about a high-tempo game, it's not necessarily the first player.
You just maybe want someone who... You know, in the classic Redknapp, just runs about a bit more.
You can't have too many players called Wesley, though.
You can't have too many.
No,
as in it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah, right. You want to have players called Wesley.
Yep, absolutely. Now, in other news, yesterday QPR back to losing ways. That's their second straight defeat again. Now, 2-1 at home to West Brom. Although they were dreadfully unlucky with that handball.
That was a clear penalty. I think it was Liam Ridgewell, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But they're running out of games now, QPR. They've got, what, 10 points, and they need to be getting, another 25 probably from the next 19 games, which on current form is simply not going to happen.
27? People talk about 37 as a magic number.
Along those lines. Mm. But the thing is, if you look at their run until the end of February, it's absolutely horrible. They play all the top sides, more or less. Some of them are at home. Maybe they could get a couple of wins here or there, you know, like they did last season at the end of the season. But they could be out of it by the end of February, the start of March.
Adel Taarabt's not going to the Africa Cup of Nations. That's big news.
That's pretty useful.
Yeah,
for
that's
them.
The good news. The bad news is that Rob Green isn't going either.
I expected that goal to be much more controversial when I saw it. But
right. Oh, when you'd heard about it and then saw it?
Then you see it. And I think at the start of it, he gets himself into such a bad position. He ends up behind the line without Fortuné really doing anything. And I think then there's a foul by Fortuné. He kind of backs in. But Harry Redknapp, obviously he's annoyed about the... about the goal being given, but when he gets back and sees it, and maybe gets back into the dressing room with Green, he'll say, "How did you manage to get yourself standing behind the line? And why didn't you punch it as well? Just buy a foul or something."
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he still gets to the ball
and then flaps it into the net.
Net. Yeah, you may be fouled, but if you're going to get contact with the ball and you're in that position, you punch it away. You do whatever you have to, not actually push it back into your own net. It's extraordinary.
Just do something apart from flapping it into your own goal. Because he didn't punch it, he just pushed it in.
We were due for one from Rob Green, though, weren't we?
Yeah, it's been a while. He's been out the side
playing. But that was one of many peculiar signings that Mark Hughes made in the summer. Because, I mean, you look at QPR's squad and you think, it's not that bad. But then you look at their defenders and the goalkeeping situation and you think, actually, they're going to have a problem here. I think if you just sign one proper centre-back, then they actually might not be quite in the position that they're in. But he didn't, and now they are. And I agree with Jacob, looking at the fixtures that Jacob showed me yesterday, it's very hard to see how they're going to get enough points to even compete to stay up.
Mm. Meantime, Jacob, love for West Brom?
It's kind of the complete opposite of what QPR have done. I can't imagine any of their players are near what QPR players are on. They've spent barely any money at all. Can't think of anyone who's double figures. I don't think any of the players they bought are at all.
But the thing is, they have Lukaku, who makes quite a difference to substitute, and that kind of
he started yesterday.
And it all sort of illustrates the kind of morality of the Premier League, where Chelsea have gone and spent however many millions of pounds buying this guy who they've got no intention of using. They then farm him out to West Brom, who've never played anything like that for a player. So West Brom now have this £15 million player. For whatever reason, because Steve Clarke has a Chelsea connection, probably. And it's quite peculiar that your manager's connections affect the kind of player that you can get in the same way that Fergie's son used to get all these United youngsters. But so they now have this player like Lukaku, who's doing quite a good job for them. But I think what happened in the past few weeks with West Brom is teams were sitting back against them because they have this great pace on the break, and because it's a settled side, they play together. They regularly, they understand the way each other move, and they're able to break at speed and find the right passes. And so in the last few weeks, teams have been denying them that kind of space, which was one of the reasons why they weren't winning every week. I mean, that and the fact that they're not that good. It's only the best teams that win every week, and they're good, but they're not that good.
Chris Brunt as well has such an underrated player. Doesn't get enough love. That was a really, really lovely goal. There was nothing on as well. But that was just when you look back at the replay of that again, that's just another example of what QPR aren't doing. No one closed him down, and Terap's challenge on him was just so half-hearted. If you let someone like Chris Brunt shoot with his left foot, then he can score from that range.
Absolutely. They move up to sixth place again now, level with Spurs, while Liverpool slip away from that exciting top four set of Champions League places after their 3-1 defeat at Stoke. An unexpected delight, this game.
Everybody was expecting it to be really dull.
Did you know, going into this game, they'd had fewer goals per match than any club in Premier League history, Stoke. Yep. And Huggy Tipp, among those, Huggy Tipp was watching them at Spurs last weekend, said, Stoke are everything that's bad about football, zero entertainment, zero fun. They're holding back football by decades.
I don't agree with that. And I think
you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that.
No, well, especially after yesterday's performance.
It's not just so much that. It's that you want variety. You don't want every team to play in the same way. And it's an Arsene Wenger favourite. When his Arsenal team used to get beaten by teams like Stoke, I mean, it was usually Bolton and Blackburn, he would suggest that them not allowing Arsenal to play in the way that they wanted was effectively cheating. And it isn't. Everyone wants to watch entertaining football, but you have to do what you can do. And Stoke, they do try and score goals. They're not that skillful, but it's nice to see a variety of games, a variety of styles of play. And I think, really, I mean, as far as Liverpool go, Brendan will probably say it's all part of the group's journey or some such. There will be bumps along the road and various other middle management cliches.
But why would Stoke be holding back football by decades? I mean, I don't really like watching them play, but I don't see how they alone can do that.
I would say one of the things about Tony Pulis apart is that he kind of defends the overly aggressive challenges of his players, and he thinks that diving is worse than, or it appears that he thinks diving is worse than flattening someone in such a way as to be dangerous. And so from that perspective, you could argue that that might be what James's chap is getting at. I don't know.
All right. Brendan's contention that this was just an incident along the road. I can't remember what phrase you were using there, Daniel.
A glitch in the group's journey.
a glitch in the group's journey. But is there not a bit more of a worrying indication about a fundamental flaw at the back for this?
I think so. I mean, I think Agger is a really good player and also an excellent footballer. A Skrtel I've never been convinced by. Glenn Johnson is an exceptional attacker, but again, not totally convinced by his ability to defend. It's hard to know with Liverpool because Brendan hasn't been there for very long, so it'll be more. He's actually going to get time, and I think he's quite lucky in that the standard that's expected of him and the standard that he has to beat is not very much. And it's also not that difficult to improve last season, where they barely won a game at home the whole season. So I think he will get time. He does know something. I'd say my suspicions of him are that he had this one team in Swansea that he inherited from Martinez that he then, we've seen Michael Laudrup make it better. And I'm always suspicious of managers when they try and sign as many players as possible who've played for them before, because it suggests that they only have one way to play and they only trust a particular set of players, where part of management is making the best of what you've got.
Right.
And I'm not sure that Brendan Rodgers has done that so far this season.
Other managers who sign a lot of players they previously had include what? Roy Keane, Harry Mark Redknapp. Hughes, Harry Redknapp.
Sam Allardyce. Has he done?
Yeah, there's a lot of Bolton at West Ham. But in the summer, Liverpool bought they didn't have a lot of money, but Barini was such a strange signing for that much money, even though he thought he had more.
Yeah.
And then the deal's done now to sign Daniel Sturridge. I don't know if that's the best use of the funds that they have. I do like him, but he's 23 now, and he has to kind of play like it. He's still playing like he's 18, and we're still seeing that bit where he cuts inside and then shoots over the bar.
How good is John Walters?
I never used to like John Walters. I said he was a complete flop about 2 years ago, and now he's starting to.
The composure he scored for his goal. Yeah. When he the goal that he scored, the first one, when he took the ball down, he could have wedded it and probably scored, but he actually had the composure to take an additional touch, have a look, and then dispatch it in the most clinical manner. And that was not the finish of a lump. Mm. That was the finish of someone who has a level of expertise, who actually is not only knows what they're doing, but is thinking about what they're doing and has the presence of mind to not rush their finish.
So tantalising, wasn't it?
Pardon?
So tantalising for Rayner as well. He thought he could get there.
Yeah.
But he couldn't.
No.
But he couldn't.
Because it went in.
Stoke this weekend are going to be hosting Southampton, so you can only see them picking up more points there, I think.
Yeah, they'll win 1-0.
Will they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Done.
Liverpool.
Set piece.
Liverpool, how big is this game? They go to Loftus Road.
Well, they lost last season.
Did they?
Yeah, they were 2-0 up with about 15 minutes to go, and they lost 3-2.
Was that towards the end of the season?
Jamie Mackey, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's going to be a big game, isn't it?
QPR have to win, basically.
Right.
Although that's what they have to do for the rest of the season.
Will they win?
Game.
I doubt it. I mean,
they could, because...
They definitely could, because Liverpool are unreliable, and I think it's fair to expect some unreliability, because they are trying to build a team. And I also think they have a slight problem with Steven Gerrard, because he kind of sort of demands... I'm not saying he actually is demanding to, but he sort of demands to be the fulcrum of the team, and I'm not sure he was ever quite that. Rafael Benitez knew that you had to play him behind a striker where he didn't have to do any defending, where he could just wander around where he wanted, because he's a player of moments, not a player who dominates games. And with not seeing him play in that position for Liverpool at the moment, I think he's playing a bit too deep and his effect is limited, although he does still take a very nice penalty.
All right. What's your prediction then for QPR Liverpool?
Draw.
Really? Daniel?
I think Liverpool will win.
Right, okay. Now, a little bit more still to come from the Premier League and posts and an unexpected treat coming up after this. Now, part three in How Let Down Are You All Going to Feel, listeners, because the unexpected treat is Barry Glendenning.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Barry. How are you?
I'm late and I'm wet. I didn't realise it was a podcast this morning. So.
Right.
But I got here in the end.
The late Barry Glendenning.
Yeah, the late Barry Glendenning.
Excellent.
Many people will be delighted to hear about my demise.
Now, what have we got still to come from the weekend? Oh, I didn't mention Villa's game with Wigan. It's going to happen this weekend. Aston Villa are taking on Wigan. Wigan lost on Boxing Day to Everton 2-1 and remain thus in the bottom three, while Villa have suffered, I think Jacob was explaining, a psychological hammer blow to their young psyches and are reeling in free fall. So I'm just thinking it's going to be a big game, that one.
Well, it's a six-pointer, isn't it? There's two teams who aren't doing very well at all. Both teams suffering from a crisis of confidence, you'd imagine. And we started binging up Villa and they've made fools of us by actually turning out to be quite rubbish, despite showing brief signs that they were about to turn into a very good side.
Mm.
And Wigan, well, they're just Wigan, aren't they? They seem to... depend now on making a late season surge up to sort of fourth or fifth from bottom, and it's a very important match for both teams.
Certainly
at the
is.
Risk of stating the blindingly obvious.
What else have we got this weekend? Reading, who are they? They're hosting West Ham.
Yeah, I'm going to them.
Are you going along?
Yeah.
Wow, because they had a 0-0. They're off the bottom of the table now. What's the likelihood of them picking up Andre Arshavin in the January transfer window?
Probably likely if they want him, because they've got the Russian owner and
he's
got his mate there as well.
Yes.
Pogrebnyak. Yeah.
Would that be a good signing for them?
No.
Would it be the catalyst that sparks their season?
No.
Really?
I think Reading are done for. I actually visited Reading myself this season and was struck by how miserable they were.
Mm.
And Arshavin, it's a real shame what he's become, actually, because he's someone who... A rare player who played for a team that I don't support, whom I was looking forward to watching play football, but unfortunately...
A Berbatov.
Yeah, although I was lucky and privileged enough to watch the great artist and artiste play for my own team for a short while.
Right.
But Arshavin, because the thing with Arshavin is, similar to Berbatov in a way, he has a really original ability. There are things that he can do and conceive that no one else can.
Right.
But unfortunately, he also appears to quite like eating.
It's interesting, those players that that kind of sell you the game, you know, like if Berbatov's playing, I'll watch that, or as you say, Arshavin through his brief period of being an exciting player. They're kind of like James Woods. When you see James Woods in a bit, oh, I'll watch that.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that at one point, Arshavin, he wasn't just box office, he was shaping up to be one of the greatest players in the world, possibly ever. And his
greatest players ever?
He looked like a player who had the potential to be one of the greatest.
In 2008, he was super.
He was absolutely
for about 3 weeks.
Fantastic.
Well, we were sitting on holiday in the sunshine drinking a lot of beer.
I think before that, and
when they won the UEFA Cup, he was the star player.
And I just don't know what's gone wrong. Like Daniel alluded there to his dietary habits getting on top of him. He seems a bit eccentric, you know, looking at his website. I'm curious to know, is he interested in playing?
I think that might be a key question.
Reputation?
Also, I'm not sure he's ever quite been played in his position by Arsenal, which does make a difference sometimes. But I remember in pre-season, when he was playing for Arsenal for the first time, he scored this incredible goal where the ball went past the goalkeeper and was almost on the byline, and it looked completely irretrievable, and he slid from about 5 yards behind the ball and somehow managed to divert it into the goal from almost on the byline. It was just something I'd never seen before. And that's, in a way, like why we watch football or any sport, is to see stuff that not only we couldn't do ourselves, but we couldn't conceive of doing. And that's what Arshavin can do. But it seems now, he might go to Reading.
Well, I hope he does. I hope his talent, his genius gets unlocked.
Running around with Waitrose on his
Reading,
chest.
Reading tend to always stuff West Ham, so you never know.
Oh.
Yeah, and they beat them 3-0 and 4-2 last season.
Wow.
And if you're going to run around with the name of a supermarket on your chest, it might as well be Waitrose. You know? At least it's not Asda or Morrison's.
Little.
Yes.
But is that football? I don't know.
In other this weekend news, Everton are taking on Chelsea, who beat Norwich. Great. They got that win away at Norwich.
Great result.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Mata or Silva? That's my big question.
Ooh, Mata or Silva. Barry, would you rather have Mata or Silva?
I would rather have Silva.
I think that it was an easy answer until quite recently.
Yeah.
Because when I first saw Mata, I thought he seemed like Silva, but without that beautiful shuffle that he does when he first gets the ball. But now in terms of end product, and partly because Mata's playing in the middle, there's not really a contest, and Mata is delivering goals even when he's not playing that well. So I would rather watch Silva because he's more aesthetic, but I think that Mata sort of makes you stand up because he's kind of more thrilling.
Right, and he's way more consistent, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's also the main man in the team that he plays for, and with City, I think they've evolved since the beginning where Silva was the main man, so now I think Yaya Toure is the guy who most things go through.
Right. Now, big game this one at Goodison Park for Chelsea. We were talking about Norwich as a test of Rafa's effect on the team, and certainly one they've passed, but this is a step up in terms of the arduousness of the fixture, no?
And once again, no Fellaini, the last game of his ban.
Right.
Yeah, although Everton tend to do well against Chelsea at Goodison Park. They tend to do well against Chelsea. I think that was part of the end of the demise of VS Burst in February when they lost 2-0 at Goodison Park last season. So,
well, they also, because Everton are a good side. I mean, they do well against Arsenal, they do well against United, they do well against City as well. I don't think Mancini not beaten them.
It's beaten them last season
at Goodison Park.
Always.
And because, I mean, ultimately, Everton have good players, and the only reason they haven't been doing better over the last couple of seasons is to do with the strength of the squad rather than the quality of the players that they have. And they're also just really difficult to play against. I mean, Fellaini has exceptional skill, but people sort of kind of dress him up as a lump because he happens to be tall, slightly violent and hard, but he also has a really lovely touch on the ball and a really good football brain, and that's quite a tough combination for anyone, whoever you are.
Certainly is. In transfer talk today, Chelsea being linked with David Villa after their 8-0 success last weekend. They want to play with Villa every week. Barcelona don't seem very keen on that move, and neither does David Villa.
Move the next Torres.
Yeah,
you wouldn't, would you?
Would you not?
Well, you're playing in possibly the best club side that there's ever been, and all footballers.
But he's not playing very
But all footballers think they're good, and I imagine he's come back from a really serious injury, so he probably has enough confidence to back his ability to get back into the team at some point.
There's also the prospect of managerial changes there. Although one wishes the best to Tito Villanova from a footballing point of view, it might be that David Villa thinks that it's a situation in flux there, and another manager might take a different view. That sounds awfully callous to put it like that, but there you go.
Well. People in general, and I think footballers in particular, tend to think of themselves.
Right.
Barry, you're dripping.
I got caught in the rain.
Was it really raining outside?
It was hammering down.
Hammering down.
Yeah. Wow. I got soaked on my way home last night and soaked again this morning.
You got soaked before going home last night as well, or not?
What?
Good. Now, wasn't a good Boxing Day for Sean O'Driscoll?
No.
Well,
no, it was. It was all right for until about 7 o'clock.
Right. Yeah. So how did it start?
Probably a decent earner as well.
Ah. This is Nottingham Forest, down in the Championship, who took on Leeds, went behind, then stormed back and won 4-2.
When the only thing to do when that happens is to sack your manager.
Yeah.
Four hours later. If a manager's not good enough, then a single win doesn't actually change that. So if they decided that they were going to sack him because he wasn't the man for the job, a 4-2 win over Leeds doesn't prove that he is the man for the job.
Then not sacking him would have been the knee-jerk reaction.
Yes, exactly. So it's never going to be about that one game.
Right. Well, they point out the fact that they haven't won back-to-back games, I think I'm right in saying, all season.
I think he said Forest. We haven't won more than two in a row.
All right, okay.
But O'Driscoll's been there, what, 5 months?
Yeah.
And seems a bit harsh to sack someone on at Christmas time, you know. a bit bah humbuggish.
There was a
Daniel, I think, was hinting before, it's not entirely a Bob Cratchit scenario, because he will get extremely fat payoff.
Oh, well, one would imagine so. And I mean, didn't he go to Nottingham Forest from Crawley without actually overseeing a game at Crawley?
And he took someone else's job who was actually doing quite well, the name of whom escapes me.
So, you know, football is a very cutthroat business, and I'm sure he'll get over it, and he'll probably get another job as well.
Roy Keane was at the City Ground yesterday.
Mm.
So
I wouldn't read too much into that. Roy Keane regularly goes to cricket matches, but I don't think he'll be taking over the England cricket team anytime soon.
Well, do them the power of good, many would suggest.
We can't have enough Roy Keane, ultimately, so it would be good to see him back.
Where would he stand? Were he to get into the Premier League, would David Moyes have a challenger?
I think that would be something I would pay an inordinate amount of money to watch. You would sell a lot of pay-per-views there.
I shook Roy Keane's hand recently, and it's a very, very firm handshake.
Did he fix you in the eye with his
gaze? He's quite nice,
actually.
Yeah.
But did you?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
the only man who burns calories with the sheer intensity of his being.
Yeah. Barry, just to fill you in on this, if you didn't catch part one and part two before joining us, we were just wondering which is the hardest Premier League manager, to put it bluntly.
Boo. And you obviously decided David Moyes.
Well, we kind of ended up. It all started when I think Daniel suggested that Paul Lambert wouldn't be a good person to tangle with.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, all right.
Right. But we thought David Moyes, who's just generally scary, might. He just looks like he's.
Well, Martin O'Neill is another man seems to have a bit of edge about him as well.
Yes.
Wouldn't like to cross him.
And who would you like to cross then? If you had to pick a fight with one Premier League manager.
Professor Sledgehammer.
I think I'd like an actual physical fight.
You'd have to have a physical fight with a
rather than
manager. Yeah.
Mental.
No.
Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, with the glasses. Or Rafa Benitez.
No, I think he's quite a big guy, isn't he?
Well, yeah,
Arsene
he is
Wenger
a big guy.
Break his glasses and then poke you in the eye with one of the shots.
The only thing is, would Arsene Wenger, if we were having a fight, would he be wearing his big padded coat? Because it could take a long time to beat him up if he's got that on.
That's the most comfortable coat in the world, though. I would like one.
Mm.
Well, I've said before in here that I would like one as well, but I was laughed out of the pot.
Certainly were. Don't try that again. A couple of posts. Flash My Girth says Christmas is you spend months telling people you don't want presents, because it's et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here's Scropodopolis saying Christmas is great.
By the way, sorry, in parts one and two, did we decide, A, was Robert Greene in the wrong for claiming to have been fouled and was...
Yeah, I think we're kind of thinking that he's a bit of an... That was his mistake.
Yeah. A bit of a Victorian lady flap.
what other questions were outstanding for you?
I wanted to know what she decided about the Newcastle goal that was disallowed, then allowed.
Well, the controversy raged on that, but I think Jacob quoted something that might have been the rules, yeah. which kind of shut the rest of us up.
Yeah, Jacob had read the laws, basically.
Yeah, or laws, indeed. And that's it. Scroppadobbit, which do you, where do you side? Christmas, is it the one or the other?
Oh, I love Christmas.
Yeah, people pretend to be nice, a definite improvement, says Scroppadopoulos, which I think wins him the argument, doesn't it, really? Might be an incredibly over-commercial money-making machine for certain parties, but it is.
Not if they pretend to be nicer.
Well, they make the effort to be nicer. For whatever reasons they're doing it, people trying to be nicer to each other is a good thing, I think.
And mendacious at the same time.
Right.
Cat on the hot tin roof.
Used to be a lawyer.
That was just cat on the hot tin roof.
Right.
For anyone who's read that.
All right.
A-level English.
Here's a question, Barry. How does it compare to Hanukkah?
I don't know anything about Hanukkah.
Hanukkah, right. You get 8 days of presents.
8 days of presents? 8 days.
I prefer Hanukkah.
If you're a spoiled child, I did not get 8 days of presents.
But hang on a second. 8 days of presents?
Yeah. One a day.
Right. On what basis?
There are 8 days of Hanukkah. Because the candle burned for 8 days in the temple.
Right.
They found, they rededicated
the oil.
They rededicated the temple, and they found there was only enough oil for 8 days.
Right.
And in fact, the oil lasted for 8 days, so Hanukkah is celebrated for 8 days.
Oh, right then. Mm. Okay, well, that cleared that one up.
Good old Maccabees.
Super stuff. Barry?
Yes. Maccabee means hammer, actually, so you should like them particularly.
Yeah.
There you go. So, Maccabee Tel Aviv is Hammer Tel Aviv.
Well, it's now because Maccabi is an organisation, but yeah, right. It's actually an abbreviation, I think. But yeah, in a way, it's Hammer Tel Aviv.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. And that, sadly, is where we end today's pod. Barry, thank you so much for stopping by for the last bit.
Sorry, I missed the first two bits.
No. Jacob, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks.
Daniel, fantastic stuff.
Thank you.
So glad you could be with us. And with all your many thoughts and fascinating theories there. Thank you, producer Ben. And that is it until when? Monday, I think. We're back on Monday. Is that New Year's Eve, Monday?
Mm.
It is. New Year's Eve, Monday, we're back. Jacob, you're here again.
Yeah.
Again.
I'm the only person in the office.
Only person in the office. Paul McInnes and someone else will be here that day as well. Might be John Nashdown. I'm told. Anyway, that's it for today. So I hope your holiday period continues to be good, listeners, and we'll be back after the weekend. Enjoy until then.